Hi folks, Joe Stagner from Microsoft here, and in this video, we're going to drill down into cross-site scripting attacks, what kinds of things a bad guy can do with them, and how we can defend against them. Before we get started, I want to point out an interesting website to you, the Open Web Application Security Project, or OWASP, OWASP.org. Now, one of the interesting things that OWASP does is keep a list of top 10 web application vulnerabilities. If we look at that list, here's the page, and I'm going to scroll down. You'll see that the number one vulnerability that they list is cross-site scripting. For folks that are completely unfamiliar with cross-site scripting, I'll read these two sentences to you. Cross-site scripting flaws occur whenever an application takes user-supplied data and sends it to a browser without first validating or encoding that content. XSS allows attackers to execute script in the victim's browser, which can hijack user sessions, deface websites, possibly introduce worms, etc. In fact, I contend that an open cross-site scripting vulnerability can allow a developer to do even more malicious things when combining cross-site scripting along with a little sort of social engineering. So, in order to understand cross-site scripting, the first thing that I want to do is I want to show you the wrong demo to illustrate cross-site scripting. This is one that I see people use all the time when they start to talk about cross-site scripting, and I think using it is a mistake. So I'm going to show it so that I can put it in context with what the real problems are. So let's go ahead and run this very simple application. Basically, I have a text box, and I'm going to put some input into this text box, and I'm going to redisplay it on the page. So if I put my name in the box and click Submit, you can see it gets redisplayed on the page. But if I enter some JavaScript here, right, script alert, and then I run it, you can see that that script gets executed, and we get the alert box. And this is the sample that so many people use to demonstrate cross-site scripting. But I think it's a mistake because it limits our perspective on how really dangerous the injection of script code or content can be on our web page. So we need to remember that there are two categories of technology that we need to sort of consider when we're thinking about cross-site scripting. One is all of the places that we take input. Now, certainly in the form of text boxes, there are a variety of input scenarios that we might be using in our application. For example, we might use a shout box, forums, comments. For example, on the ASP.NET website, all of our content has places where you can enter comments relative to that video or that piece of content that you looked at. A service request, a wiki, knowledge bases take input from the users. Your user profile when you register on a website. Basically, any place that you take input from the user. However, this demo tends to conceptually restrict the concept of input to fields on a form. I'm going to use fields on a form as the model for our demonstrations in this video, but you want to remember that user input can come from many places, including other sources other than web forms. So for example, when you call a web service, you get data in return, and that data might be content that's used in a web page. When you get data out of a database, are you certain that the data that you're retrieving to use on your web page was appropriately filtered before it was stored in the database? So we should consider two things. One, we should consider all user input as evil until proven otherwise. And two, we should consider user input as any data that comes to our application across a trust boundary, right? So not just forms on an input field. So now that we understand that, the second thing that we should embrace is how really powerful JavaScript and the document object model can be. So it's not just about popping up an alert box. Think about all of the kinds of things that you can do with JavaScript and content. Well, the first thing is, with JavaScript and the document object model, I can choose what I display from inside my code in any defined area of my web page. Another set of things that I can do is I can use JavaScript to make calls to services using the XML HTTP object. I can do things like extract the value in any field on my page. I can monitor keyboard input, for example. Right? So JavaScript, although as developers we look at things like C# or VisualBasic.net and we don't put JavaScript in the same category from a power perspective as those full-blown languages, there's a lot that you can do with JavaScript. So just I'm going to show you a couple of JavaScript examples, and then I'll give you a real scenario-based version of a cross-site scripting attack, and then we'll drill down into some of the defensive mechanisms that we can implement. Now, you'll be happy when we get towards the end of the video to find out that the .NET framework both does a lot of cross-site scripting prevention for you automatically, and in fact, in order to run this demo, I've had to intentionally break the .NET framework's ASP.NET security model for cross-site scripting. So I'll show you the things that the .NET framework does, as well as some things that we should do to add to that to keep our applications secure from cross-site scripting. But before we get into the defenses, let's first take a look at some basic JavaScript demos that illustrate the kinds of things that a bad guy might leverage when implementing cross-site scripting. And I think this is super important because I'm a firm believer that in order to defend against bad guys, you need to be able to understand the kinds of things that they can do. And that's a little bit counterintuitive for developers. We don't sit around all day thinking like bad guys. We don't look at our application and say, hey, if I were a bad guy, how would I approach attacking this application? So we're going to do a little bit of that now. Let's go ahead and look at some JavaScript demos, and then we'll see the cross-site scripting scenario. So the first of the JavaScript demos that I want to show you is a fairly simple one, but an incredibly dangerous thing if a bad guy could inject this sort of code on your page. So notice, this is a login. I'm going to enter my username and my password. So think about how many applications you've seen that that display user-contributed content as well as a login box. So they have, you know, the most recent forum posts or the most recent comments or a shout box or what have you. But also have a little box somewhere, usually in the upper right-hand corner, that allows the user to log into their account on that website. So I've just entered my username and my password here in this form. Notice, I haven't even clicked submit, but let's go look at this other window that I opened in the background. Here's the text that I entered. Now, in order for Internet Explorer and most common current browsers to open a pop-up window, you would have to have approved that. So you'll get the pop-up blocker would say, do you want to let this application open a window? But remember that XML in all modern browsers has, JavaScript in all modern browsers has access to the XML HTTP request object. So I could inject script that not only listened to the keyboard, but sent the product of that keyboard out over HTTP, and that doesn't explicitly require the user's permission. And I'm actually going to demonstrate that when I get to the full-blown cross-site scripting scenario demo that I'll do last. All right, so that's just one example of the kind of dangerous things that you can do with JavaScript that sometimes we forget about. So in another scenario, we're going to look at some JavaScript code reading the contents of the Windows clipboard. Now, to be clear, I'm using Internet Explorer 8, and IE8 and real modern browsers will require the user to give their permission for the code running in the page to access the clipboard. So for example, if I copy this, what's on the clipboard, and then click the Read Clipboard button, this runs some JavaScript that's trying to access the Windows clipboard, and I'm explicitly given the opportunity to allow or deny access to the clipboard from my JavaScript code. Now there are several things to consider here, right? If you're listening to this, you're, by common terms, a computer expert of sorts. But think about the millions of folks out there that browse the internet that are not, right? How many of them would just automatically click yes, allow access? The other thing to remember is that there are still millions of people out there that are using older versions of browsers that do not have this security check in there, right? So just by sheer volume, I can be certain that if I deploy this on a broadly accessed website, a significant portion of the users that come to that website are not going to be running versions of web browsers that will intuitively block this. The second thing to remember is the kinds of things that you might swap off a clipboard. So how many times have you, for example, copied and pasted a connection string or a username and password from a text file where you store them, or a password vault. Lots of folks do that, or you know, any other information that you copy and paste that you might not want to share with the world. So that's one thing to consider. The other thing to consider is this. So I'm going to go ahead and click Allow Access here. Right now, since I can inject content onto this page, perhaps that I can create some sort of phishing scenario where I coax the user to allow keyboard access once for a valid reason. The next thing to remember, though, is that once a user has authorized clipboard access for this page, any code that ever tries to access the clipboard on this page is valid. So if I now say start the clipboard timer, what that does in the background is it checks every 5 seconds to see if there's something new in the clipboard. And if there is, we redisplay it. So for example, let's go over to my website and grab a little snippet of text and then pop back over. And you'll see in a couple of seconds that that's been updated. Notice it just automatically happened. And even when I started the clipboard timer, or when the clipboard was accessed, I didn't have to give an additional authorization to access the clipboard. So you can picture a scenario by which there might be a valid way, or a way to convince the user to authorize the page for clipboard access, and then under the covers do some nasty things, because once you authorize access to the clipboard for the page, all access to the clipboard for this page is available. Right? And this will just keep happening. If I just keep adding stuff to the clipboard, it will keep every few seconds, it'll be checked and it'll be added. So remember, in this case, I'm just grabbing what's on the clipboard and just redisplaying it on the page. But what if I was creating an XML HTTP request object and sending the data from the clipboard to an endpoint out there on the web someplace? And I'll actually show you how to do that in the final demo in this video. Right? So that's another scenario that could be a little scary from a script injection perspective. Let's look at one that could be really scary. So let's first start by just running this application, and you'll see that it doesn't do much of anything yet. Notice it just says you visited and that's it. But let's go back to another instance of my browser and let's go a few places. Let's go to eBay, and let's go to Amazon, one of my favorite shopping destinations. And how about AOL, or Citibank? How about Yahoo? Right, so we've gone to a few different websites now. Now, let's go back into that application again and refresh the page, and look what it knows. It knows some of these places that we've been to. Well, how is that possible? Well, there's a little known technique in JavaScript that allows you to figure out whether or not a user has been to a website that appears in a particular list. So I'll share this code so you can have a look at it. But the interesting thing here is, notice that I have this list, and there are a few of these, few of the sites that we went to are in the list. Apple, AOL is here, let's see, eBay is here, Amazon.com is here. Right. So what if, instead of showing them on the page, I was using the XML HTTP request object to send the results of this query, which websites from my list has this user visited, out to a web service? What value would that be? Well, there are two potential values. One is, if I found a vulnerability in one of those websites, I can coax the user to go to that website to execute the vulnerability. The other thing that I can do, though, is I now know that, for example, if Amazon is on that list, there's a high likelihood that they're an Amazon.com customer. I mean, isn't everybody? So I might be able to either inject content or send this person an email if I've acquired their email address, and coax them to a phishing attack that is a lookalike to Amazon.com. Right? So I can sort of reduce, I can increase the likelihood that a combinatorial attack of phishing and an errant website might yield better results for stealing, you know, data, account information, product, or money outright. So this is a little a lesser known technique that you can execute in JavaScript, but is a kind of scary one as far as I'm concerned. Let's look at another demo that leverages both the kinds of things you can do with the document object model and content injection as opposed to script. We tend to think of cross-site scripting as all about the JavaScript that you can execute. It's also very important to understand that I can insert content into the document object model as well. The other thing that we're going to look at is that once I've got a little bit of content in there, maybe I can call web services and basically do whatever I want. That JavaScript can talk to that web service, and that web service can return content. And basically, you know, that's a hijacking framework, a browser hijacking framework written in JavaScript. So let's go ahead and just run this really quickly. And remember that I'll make some of this code available on request. But the thing to remember here is that we're just looking at the kinds of things that can be done with JavaScript and the document object model before we look at a scenario on what a real attack might look like and how to fix it. So we've all seen this sort of web service example where here on my page I'm going to enter a bit of data and I'm going to send it to the web server, and the web server is going to render a response, and we're going to put that here in our page. So I've just done that. And this particular page uses the ASP.NET AJAX technology, but remember, that's not necessary. So I can just create an instance of the XML HTTP request object and make HTTP posts from inside my JavaScript without using the whole ASP.NET framework. Right. So, for example, here, look at this link. Now notice, I hover over the link. Down here, it tells me this is the link that you're going to go to. But I'm going to click on this button, and notice what just happened. The button actually asked the web service for some content, and the web service sent back a new link. I've replaced it. So think about, in terms of script injection, I can replace any of the links on the page. I can trick a user into navigating someplace they might not want to go. And to make matters worse, look what happens here if I hover over this. Notice down here in the bottom, there's no hint as to where it goes to. So because I've injected this with JavaScript, I've also been able to hide the target destination. And if I go ahead and click on that, obviously, something terribly bad might happen. Right? Another thing to remember here is, notice that I just clicked on the Click Me Man button, and I can insert controls. Right? So for example, I could, through a cross-site scripting attack, I could inject another submit button, or basically any JavaScript control, and for that matter, I could inject object tags. Right? So let's take it all the way. Click me, I dare you. And obviously, we're continuing to execute warrant code. Notice here, I'm going to navigate to another page. Notice what this is going to do is actually insert content, and that image had an on mouse over event. Now, I did that for demonstration purposes, but the thing to remember is, what if that image was 1 pixel high and 100% width? That would mean that I could sort of proactively force the user to execute that Java code in their browser's context just by moving the mouse around on the screen. And then the last thing I'm going to do here is, when I click on this update content button, you'll see that we get some content, and then I'm actually injecting an iframe, and you can see here in this iframe is hosting the misfitgeek.com website. So a bad guy could do all kinds of nasty things just by inserting content in the page in the document object model. So now that we've looked at some of the things that we can do with JavaScript and document object manipulation in the context of what a bad guy might use them for in cross-site scripting, let's look at perhaps a real-world demonstration of what a cross-site scripting attack might look like. Now, I want to point out again that I had to specifically break some of the default security built into ASP.NET in order to get this demo to happen. But we're going to cover all of the defenses, both implicit and explicit in ASP.NET to cross-site scripting after we've had a look at this demo. So let's go ahead and run this theoretic Misfit Geek bookstore. And here we have a place where we could take user input, like a shout box or a comments field or what have you. And we'll say, Joe says hello just in the shout box. And notice that there's a persistence mechanism here so that everybody that comes to the site, I'm not just shouting to myself, everybody that comes to the site is going to see the content of the shout box. So this is a place where a bad guy might go, user input, maybe I can look and see if there's a if there's an injection vulnerability in the shout box. So you saw the simple demo before where somebody inserted a script tag that popped up an alert box. Well, again, I recommend that you don't use that to demonstrate cross-site scripting, and a bad guy wouldn't use an example like that because once they've inserted that script tag, that alert popping up is an immediate warning to the website developers that they've got a vulnerability. So if I'm a bad guy, what I would likely do instead is something like this. Let's see if I can insert a bold tag and have it affect the content that gets displayed. And as you can see, that bold tag was not only accepted, but is rendered. So although I don't know that someone hasn't specifically blacklisted the script tag, I can see that certain markup elements are allowed through the submission of the shout box. And by the way, you do not want to try and prevent cross-site scripting by simply blacklisting a certain collection of script or JavaScript tags, because that's pretty easy to get around. Right? So what I'm going to do here is, now that I've determined that there's a high likelihood that there's a vulnerability here, I'm going to take some JavaScript. Now, what I would do if I was a bad guy was I would go to ViewSource, and I would say, okay, let's see. Well, there's some formatting here. Let's check that out. And I want to find some place that I can inject. So here's a div I can inject, or maybe this one. I'll inject into the content div, or maybe main. Anyway, because JavaScript can manipulate the document object model by changing the value of any particular tag, or I might be able to just insert a new div, I can manipulate this contact however I want. I also might notice here that there's a submit button. Right, I might want to inject an event handler for the submit button. But in any event, what a bad guy is going to do is he's going to look at the content that's in the page to see what sorts of things he might manipulate. So I've already done that and pre-crafted an attack. Let's see what the attack does, and then we'll dissect a little bit. So I'm just going to take the markup and the JavaScript that I've created to insert as a cross-site scripting attack, and I'm going to go ahead and submit it. And now, look what we've got here. Notice that I haven't navigated to another page, but I've injected some nasty stuff into this page through this cross-site scripting vulnerability. Now look, I was already logged into this page, and this page looks exactly like it should look, and the URL is exactly as it should. So to the end user, the perception is, oh, I didn't, you know, my credit card must have expired or what have you. So I'm going to go ahead and enter the appropriate data. And we'll enter an expiration date. And name on the credit card. And I'm going to enter Bill's name since he can afford to have his credit card stolen way more than I can. And my account password, since as the bad guy, I'm thinking, while I'm going to steal the credit card information, I might as well steal the username as well for the site. Then I'm going to click update, and you'll see that form disappeared. I'm still here on the website, just like I would expect. Nothing's changed in the shout box, right? So I've just done that through a combination of inserted JavaScript and document object models. However, something's happened under the background. My server has received some data. So I'm going to go and look into this directory where, remember the name that I used, Bill Gates? Well, my code just takes the username and creates a text file for each entry. And you'll notice here's the credit card type, the number, the credit card name, expiration date, site username, and site password received through a web service. So let's go ahead and drill down into the application itself momentarily. Right, so there are two things we can look at. Right, one is we can look at this JavaScript code, and let's look at this in a highlighting editor. So uh, This is the JavaScript editor from cPanel, and it's one of my favorites. So you can see here, I've just created a new div that's an overlay, so I haven't replaced any of the content that's on the page. I've just laid on top of what was there, unbeknownst to the user. And here, I've created all of the fields for input, given them names that I know. And then down here, I've got some JavaScript. And you notice that there's a fair bit of JavaScript that's inserted here, but it's not an inordinate amount of JavaScript to write. And what I'm doing here is notice that I'm setting up a JavaScript array in order to, or I should say a JSON array in order to send all of the fields and their values for all the credit card information. And let's see, down here, so I can find the spot. Oh, here's where I'm calling up the XML HTTP request object. And basically, here's the magic. Basically, I've created an object up here that has an endpoint of where my malicious web server is going to live. Now, a bad guy is not going to send you to a website that contains his name or trackable information. He's just going to have deployed a endpoint out there someplace on maybe a hijacked server or some temporary thing, or perhaps he lives in an area where law enforcement is not friendly to pursuing these sorts of issues. But in any event, I've set up a URL, and then down here I'm creating this object, this class instance of this AJAX class, where I'm specifying, here's the exact service name and method that I'm going to call, and I'm going to bundle up all of the data that I want to pass on a query string. Right? This is actually not used in this particular demo. And then I'm just going to call that, and then while I'm calling that web service, I don't care about the results. Right? So I haven't wired up a listener because I don't care if there's a result from this service method call. So instead, I'm just going to take that overlay, that div that I've created that overlaid the existing content, and I'm going to set its value to space. So from a visual perspective, it just goes away. And that's the behavior that I want. Now, in my malicious web service, let's go ahead and look at the code there. All I'm doing here is simply the sendData method simply sets up variables, takes each of those values out of the HTTP request, and writes those into a file. I could write them into a database if I was fishing for millions of them. Right? But pretty straightforward stuff there. On the AJAX side, remember, this is all injected code. So here, you know, I'm dimming up an instance of the XML HTTP request object, and you can see here this does not require the application to be using ASP.NET AJAX or any particular AJAX framework. All I'm doing here is simply figuring out which kind of browser I'm in and creating an instance of the XML HTTP request object that I can use to send the data back to a web service, to any endpoint. So this is pretty basic JavaScript networking programming stuff, and it's all built into modern browsers. So pretty scary thing. However, the solutions are quite straightforward. So let's come back and look at some of the ways that we can definitively defend our applications against this sort of cross-site scripting attack. So the first thing that you want to do to defend against cross-site scripting attacks in your ASP.NET application is not to break the innate defense against cross-site scripting that's built into ASP.NET. So what I mean by that is, let's switch from design to source view and have a look at the top line of code in my page here, and you'll see that there's this entry, validate request equal false. This is not the default. I've specifically had to set validate request equal false in order to be able to break the application's default security model. So to show what would happen if I change this to the default, which is true, right? So if there's, by default, there's no validate request entry in this line, in your page directive. And so the default is true. Having changed that to the default value, now let's go ahead and run. And let's see if we can inject script into our page here. So if I say script alert, and here, we're not really interested in sort of the
scenario of using this tag, so we'll just use this mechanism. Click on the submit button, and boom. Notice we've got an unhandled exception here. A potentially dangerous request.form value was detected from the client. Shoutbox equals script alert. Now, there's several interesting things that have happened here. So not only does it tell you what form, what field, and exactly what was entered in that field, but the exception type is system.web.http request validation exception. Now, we're seeing the detail of this message because we're running on our developer box. My recommendation is as follows. First, never turn this off unless you really, really need to. So really need to means you have an application scenario where you must let the user insert or submit markup, including script code, back to your application. So there are very few scenarios where that's mandatory, and I recommend that you never turn off page validation unless your scenario demands that you accept full markup back into the back end of your application. The next thing is you want to create a custom handler for this exception, request validation exception, because when you do that, you can then store this information like the specific field and what was entered into it. This gives you a couple of rich pieces of data to work with when you evaluate the data forensically. First, it lets you know that folks are doing this sort of activity. And secondly, it lets you know what kind of approaches they're taking to try and hack your application, which will help you evolve your defensive strategy. Another recommendation is that wherever possible, don't accept any sort of input from unauthenticated users. So, for example, in this case of the shoutbox, let's not even show the shoutbox, or let's not enable the submit button unless the user is authenticated. The advantage of this is when I record this information in this exception handler that I would implement for this, I can also add a bit of code that gets the current username and password so that I can directly associate this malicious intended activity to the user that perpetrated that activity. So I can then take actions like suspend the user's account or directly contact them to say, hey, you know, looks like from the information that our defensive system gathered, you're trying to enter XYZ type of JavaScript, and that's a violation of our terms of service. So the ability to associate the user credentials with the kind of script that they're injecting can be a really powerful tool as well. So that's one approach, and it's a very easy one. All it means is you don't have to explicitly turn something off. And this is one of the advantages of programming with a strong framework, is that these things can be built in once, and you don't have to do anything special to leverage that functionality, in this case, this defensive functionality. Now, having said that, I don't want you to assume that this means that you can forget about implementing any other security features when taking user input. So this is a great strong feature, but there's no such thing as a bulletproof feature that no one at any point in the future will figure out how to get around. So one of the secrets to making sure that your web application is not successfully hacked is to implement defense in depth or a layered defense strategy. So even though this is a great bit of cross-site scripting injection protection that you get as part of the ASP.NET framework by default, you want to add some additional mechanisms in place, and I'm going to show you how to do that now. So let's go ahead and set validate request back to false. Now, don't ever do this in your application, as I mentioned, unless you really must take markup input from your users. But I'm going to set it equal to false so I can show you at the code level the other very easy mitigation that you can add to your code. So let's go to the place where the input from the user is handled. You can see here, right, here's the button do shout click event handler where I'm opening up a text box, I'm appending whatever's in the shout box, and then saving the file and rereading it. Right? So the problem here is that I'm just taking whatever they enter into this text box and saving it in the text file. And then when I take it back out of the file, I'm not checking it. So
Luckily, the .NET framework has this rich collection of classes that are all available for us to leverage, and there's a very easy way to encode the HTML input. So all I have to do is say HTTP utility HTML encode. Having done that, now let's go ahead and run our application again. So let's see what happens if we try and put a script tag in there now. Notice what we get here. Instead of the script that runs, because that was encoded, it just displays. Now, that's sort of ugly, and we might not want that to be displayed to the user, but we have no cross-site scripting vulnerability in place, right? Just by adding those that one simple method call, HTTP utility, HTML encode. Now, by the way, one of the things you might also want to do is if you don't know where that data is coming from, right, you may want to, before you display it, if you're taking it out of the, in this case, a text box, you might want to encode it on the way out if you aren't certain of the cleanliness of the data that went in. So we've all worked with scenarios where one person writes the code that stores the data in the database and then another person writes the code that takes the data out of the database. The person that puts it in just takes it as however it's entered and stores it, assuming that folks will perform whatever's necessary against that data to make sure that it's appropriate for their application. The guy who's writing the data that takes the data out of the database and displays it on the page assumed that the guy who put it in the database filtered it before he stored it, and that assumption creates a vulnerability. So again, you might want to use HTML encode. I recommend that you do it whenever you take user input, so don't depend on somebody else to do it farther down the line, but you have the option of using it in both places if you like. Okay, so now we've seen two levels in our defense in depth strategy against cross-site scripting. One is the default page validation that ASP.NET provides that prevents script from being injected into any text box in our web application. And the second is the use of the HTML encode function in order to explicitly make sure that script is encoded so it's not executable if it slips through and ends up on our page somewhere. But there are a few other things that we could do as well. And I'm going to cover those in some detail in subsequent videos, but I wanted to enumerate them so you can start to play with them on your own. The first is, in order to accomplish the cross-site scripting attack that I just demonstrated, I had to inject quite a lot of markup and JavaScript code, and I did that in a shoutbox. Shoutbox really only needs to take like 40 characters, so if I had restricted the number of bytes that could be entered into that shoutbox, I would have made it much more difficult for a bad guy to inject that much code. Now, the other thing that I might do in combination, since if you restricted the input to, say, 40 or 60 characters in that shoutbox, I could just break all of my markup and my JavaScript into 40-character chunks and submit those one after the other into the shoutbox, and the sum collection of all of those submissions would be the full executable attack that I just demonstrated. So another thing that I might do is, in addition to the size constraint, I might put submission throttling on that field so that you had to wait 60 seconds in between submissions, or that you could only enter 6 shouts in a 24-hour period. And if that were the case, it would give you a much better chance at defending against that attack. Plus, even if somebody tried to submit an injection attack one bit at a time, you'd have a much greater chance of finding out that someone was doing it before anything bad happened. Another thing that you can do is explicitly use .NET's regular expression processing in order to evaluate the values that are being input by your user into the text boxes. And regular expression use is a subject matter that's really beyond the scope of this video, but I will in a subsequent video at least show you how I use regular expressions to validate input. And the thing that I'll note to you about that just as a preview is that I don't actually know a whole lot about regular expression syntax, but I use tools that help me write regular expressions that meet my needs.
Another thing that might be of interest for you to know is that Microsoft has, over the last year or so, been working on an anti-cross-site scripting library. And I'll definitely do a video that covers the basics of the anti-XSS library. If you're interested, just go to codeplex.com and search for anti-XSS, and you can start playing with that now. So we've got a pretty good idea of the kinds of things that might be done with a cross-site scripting attack and the ways that ASP.NET and the .NET framework make it pretty easy to start implementing a layered defense against cross-site scripting. Now I hope that you'll take these things and start to implement them in all of the places in your applications where you take user input. ¶¶